Agnes Sassoon, Reel 2. Agnes, you were telling me how you'd been taken to a camp on the outskirts of Budapest.
Yes. I don't know the place. It was a terrible muddy place, as I explained before. And when they showed goodwill some of the Arrow Cross, and as he saw that I'm really a child, but I went to work what they had to do. I don't know, take water out from puddles, things, rubbish, things. They didn't need the work to have done. They didn't know what to do with that at the time. They didn't have their orders probably. Later I realized it, I didn't know. And this Aranka was with me, so it was okay, fine. And he told me to have a run for it, because when they take us to this Kishok Paya, I don't know, they called it a place where it was a big, great place, like an arena, yes, and they collected the people, collected people to take for marches that I can escape and so on. And I don't know, maybe he might have been still, but I didn't know where I am. And I didn't know how to get home, and I just thought, I had an offer later as well like that on my march. But I didn't take it up, because I thought myself that I'm safe until I am with this lady, and I wouldn't know where to go in the mud and where I would be picked up, and I didn't trust. And I didn't know whether he's serious. He was always drunk anyway, that fellow. They always drank. I don't know what they drank all the time.
How are you feeling at this time? Did you think much about your parents? Or?
I was just worried that my parents came to the same situation. I really, funnily enough, and I must tell you in all sincerity, I always was worried when I was worried, not for myself. I was worried for my brother, and I was worried for my parents. I knew how much my father can do and what a great man he is, and it's true. He saved my mother, because my mother was taken by the fascists, and he, with a few people, as SS dressed, saved her from the group.
You found out about this
after the war. And he was a very brave man, but he couldn't save his own son, because, you know, he sent him to a safe place with false papers, because they falsified like mad the papers with stamps. And when he was arrested later in that cellar, that belonged actually to a relative of ours, because the Royal Hotel belonged to the Korányi family and pastor. And Mr. Korányi, he's one of the managers of the Basil Street Hotel, and he's a very educated man, and the SS cellars went in his hotel, and my father was very familiar with that hotel, even with the cellars. And he gave orders for the Arrow Cross to let him out, to say, "What? I want to catch a few Jews more." And he was beaten to death, and it was dark, because it was curfew, and they let him out, and he collapsed in a policeman's arm, and that policeman he told the policeman that he's in a safe house, in a Spanish safe house. He has a letter to take him there. And he took him there. But he couldn't save my brother, because he sent him with false papers to a family. And this family was very rude to each other. And my darling brother came home and he said, "Dad, Mom, whatever will happen to me, I don't care, I'll be with you, because I just can't stand the woman, the man bashes the woman," and so he never heard such a thing. And he came home, and that was it. And then my father and other people tried with Gentile friend to put him in that bunker, because he was much taller than his age. I was smaller, he was taller, you know. And unfortunately, I told you what happened with the bunker.
Camp you were taken to on the outskirts of Budapest, the sports stadium. How long did you stay there approximately?
Well, I wish I would have known. Everybody asked me. I don't know. I suppose maybe a couple of weeks. I don't know. It might have been 10 days, a couple of weeks. And then they probably collected that. And then we went to that, back to the outskirts of Budapest, where they took all the Jews from to marching to Hegyes Halom. Hegyes Halom was the border of where they took people to Germany. And Aronka was still in a very good state. She could look after herself. I think she had a bit of money to give for these fascists there. And she could get things which she wanted a bit, right? And when we started to march, then, as I describe it in the book, someday it was raining, the blankets were wet, the clothes were taken away from us, which was a good shoe or good this or good that. Sometimes we got a soup somewhere, although on pigsties or outside on a football place or what, wherever it should be for many people, you know, I don't know how many hundreds or thousands. And on my way, again, once happened in a town, that one of the Aerocross, no German, Aerocross told me, little girl, go on, have a get out of the queue, and you ask someone and they will take you somewhere to your parents' home. I didn't know where my parents were, if they were at home or not. And I again didn't take the chance, because as long as I was with Aronka, I was all right, I felt, you know. But then I didn't know what I'd find. It was an instinct.
How often did you get food on this march?
Oh, we were very hungry. Oh, I think once a day, maybe.
What kind of food?
Well, they made some soup on the way, usually, and raw bread, sort of bread things. What I can remember, until we went to Hegye Shalom, we had more food than later by the Germans, because this peasant people, don't know, gave something probably to cook. And I don't know, they had to cook. They have an they organized it among themselves, and they were cooking some soups. I don't know, rubbish sometimes, sometimes better. It depended well. But I can remember that even if we're hungry, it was more food than later, after the edition. We had nothing then, yeah? So many people escaped during that period, grown-ups. I was told after, and they survived. And it was really truthful, they let them go some.
This was on the march?
On the
from
march,
the first
yes,
camp
yes.
To Hadesh Haman.
Yes. But I didn't know, I just knew it later. You see, after I was a child. And I was thinking, as long as I have a safety, this Aronka, this lady, to hang on to, I don't know what I find at home, because it was all mixed up. And I was just felt insecure if I go alone, you know. I just didn't. I was not encouraged, but I didn't want to leave her. And she got shabbier every day, and shabbier, and sicker, and sicker. And it was, so did I, you know. And wet, and no clothes proper. We still had some good clothes, but not, if someone saw, then they just banged it out from us with the gun or what. And suddenly came, I can swear, but I can't say it for sure, that was Mindszenty, the highest priest then in Hungary, Cardinal Mindszenty, with a high tall chair in a village when the Jews marched, and with a lot of splendor. I never will forget it, that figure with a sort of popish crown on his head. And they brought him, carried him, and he blessed us with a cross. And but he, as when I heard after the war, he didn't do anything against it. He didn't ask, he didn't plead for us. He himself was later a prisoner by the regime, not by the fascist. But he didn't do anything to help people otherwise or do something. But he showed himself up. And I remember that, because that was in the dreary time a spot of light, something to see. And then eventually we arrived to that Hegye Shalom.
Whereabouts is this?
That is on the border of Germany and Hungary, where all the trains were waiting.
To take us,
yes.
Into Germany.
Yes, Wallenberg saved there a lot of people, Baron Wallenberg. And I think one
this
day...
The Swedish
yes,
ambassador.
I think one day our wagon was opening, and not because they used to take out the dead bodies. We had to sling them out and get
on
some...
On the train?
On the train, yes.
From
Hegye Shalom to Germany. Well, I don't know, we went to Dachau very, very long time, too many deaths. I was getting a bit passive.
What were the trains like? What were the carriages like?
Well, very filthy. After they opened it every day, maybe once, I don't know, maybe twice, and they made us to clean up the dirt and to take the dead bodies. Well, I was not, I didn't take any, I was realizing that I was sitting once on a dead body because they were very squashed. But it didn't affect, I was so shocked and so amazed, in days, that I didn't, you see, I didn't react nothing, I just said...
Were you still with Aranka?
No, I lost her on Hegyeshalo.
How?
I were looking for, because there were millions of other people from all sides of the world coming there. And we were going together and we were divided, right, left, you know, and they told us where to go, in which wagon. I went when I was free. You were not free because they pushed you with the guns and everything. But funnily enough, I had a feeling when they told me you go on the right and I went on the left hand. I think that was that's how I survived.
What was the significance?
Well, maybe one went to Auschwitz to die, the other one went the other way. I just assume it because they looked at you like a chicken. You see, if you are enough, even if you are not fed, nobody could be fed. But you have got some
enough to work.
Into work, and if you were young and not too sick, even if you looked like a skeleton, it didn't matter, you see. And then they couldn't tell your age, so you could say anything. But you see, there were many, many things which you can't imagine, that when you get used to it, you forget your past, and you live for that present day. And you think tomorrow will be over, if you are optimistic. If you are not optimistic, I don't think you would survive it. And I think all those people who were not optimistic, who were only pessimistic, and they had every reason to be pessimistic, but they did not survive it. And my mother had a tendency of pessimism, and she suffered a lot more than ordinary people did, but she didn't go in a camp. And my father was an optimist, and he also somehow didn't go in the camp. And the two children, you see, he lost one, my brother. He wanted to save him with false paper, and I just was taken. And they say it can't happen, but it did happen that he was in one night, all his hair gone white. When he realized it, yes.
How? What were these trains like? What were the carriages like?
They were bolted. They were always clink-clonk, I heard. And there were some old people, some young people yearning, crying, some for their parents, some for their children. They were divided, you see. Some was with a mother, and the mother died, and they started to scream. And, you know, they didn't open the wagon, and was not such a danger to scream. But later it was very dangerous to scream when we went in camps. But then they opened it, and we had to bring some water in and to clean all the dirt. There was no facilities.
There was no toilet facilities or sanitation?
No. But you see, in these occasions, several times it happened that some young people disappeared, and a commotion was going on, and they said, "You come off and you take the water," and they never came back. And I had always a feeling later, when I knew about Wallenberg, that one day it was open and they wanted me to get out. And I didn't dare, I didn't move. I was dazed and stunned, and I just did not move.
Who wanted you to get out the
German? And maybe, yes, you see, maybe because he worked with the Germans, and this, a lot of young, when I later thought of it, they didn't come back in the wagon. I didn't know who they were because you couldn't recognize them, you see.
You think Wallenberg saved them?
I think some of them might have been saved, and when they picked me and opened and they gave some water and the cleaning, they told me I was getting out for making it a bit clean, and standing by there, and the German pushed me that I should go there. I didn't go.
How many, approximately, would you say was in each wagon?
If my imagination is right, which is a true imagination, But a child is different. I suppose they pushed in sometimes 60, 70 people. We were really on each other.
Were they cattle trucks?
Yeah, cattle trucks. We were really on each other.
What did you have to eat whilst you were on this train journey?
I can't recall anything. Just they gave us once a piece of the soldier bread, very hard. And water. And maybe one or two stuff, some soups. But the soups were empty. I don't know. It was, I don't even know what it was in it. It was nothing in it.
How long?
Like salted water or what?
How long would you estimate the journey lasted?
Well, I think it lasted about 2 weeks because we were all over around until I got to this Landsberg Dacha because it was bombing in the time. And when it was bombing, they stopped the cattle wagons. And my wagon was a good wagon because it was not open. Some wagons were even open.
Open topped?
Yes, and then the people were frozen.
And you could hear the bombing going on?
Yeah. And I think one day they told us, I don't know whether it's true, that we are on the Berlin state. How we got there, I don't know. But we were by Berlin and it was bombed several days and they hit also the wagon, some of the wagons.
And
their lives, yeah. So it was no difference whether they were Jews in it or what, because, you know, they just did what they had to do in the war. But all this bombing, I knew that it's the same danger for us from up then till down. But I didn't realize it till after when I was told, when I could ask.
So after?
When I arrived to Dachau, finally. I didn't know which camp, but it was written Dachau, and then Arbeit makes happy, you know. Work makes you happy. Arbeit makes frei, makes you free.
Did you know,
I knew German.
Did you know of concentration camps before you were taken to one? Had you any prior knowledge?
Well, I heard the story. This is very strange because this Alex Petrushka, which I write about it later, he was in the first concentration camp and that was Dachau. And Dachau, when Dachau was, there was no other concentration camp first time. Only they put in people like mixed marriages, they didn't want to divorce, or rich people that they wanted to extort money and they wanted to. And even from Czechoslovakia or from Germany, if they put someone in Dachau, they have a chance for plenty of money to get out. But that I was told later in Pressburg and by Alex and later by my father.
So when you arrived at Dachau, you didn't know what the concentration camp was?
Dachau, no, I knew. Then by that time, everybody knew. But first, when I was little, I'm going back with time, Dachau was the only concentration camp where even from Pressburg, a rich Jew was taken and there were millions paid for him to get him back, and they did get him back. But then later, when even Alex confirmed that his father was taken in another camp, they started to mushroom the camps and there were hundreds and thousands then. And that's how I know from the source, because Alex is a good source. He was a half Jew and a German.
Alex was the...
Alex Petrushka,
the teenage boy you met in Dachau.
That I met in Dachau, yes. But before I came into Dachau, and I got down, who couldn't get down, was just thrown away, you know what I mean?
Down out of the truck.
Yes, and there was someone who recognized me. Well, at that time, I was very, very bad looking, but not yet a complete skeleton, right? And someone from my mum's birthplace...
Who was already in the camp?
Who was already in the camp, recognized me. And I had a little piece of bread and I thrown it to him. Because I knew he was long time. And I can identify that even because he lived in Israel after the war. He survived and he told the story for my mother.
He remembered you.
And he told for everyone this story.
What were your first impressions then when you got down out of the cattle wagon with everybody else? Can you
Well, I did not know. I it made me scared, but I thought, well, I can't go back. I can't go anywhere. And this man who worked, who recognized me, told me his name. I didn't know who he is, because I just know that his sister is a doctor, and he's somehow related or the same town or village. And he said I shouldn't give him the bread because I won't have any other. He was very good, actually, but I did. And then they pushed me, and they pushed me in. And then when I met, after plenty of queuing up, we gone to these bars and to this. And there where I met Alex, where I get one high heel shoe and one, and I was screaming, and they beat me, and Alex came, and he didn't then move, he didn't do nothing, but then he told me what to do.
So can you go through the events exactly?
Yes, I think that then when I got the first hysterical reaction and really started to scream and to, you know, I was out of my mind and I said, what's going on? What did I do? What happens to me? You know, sort of feeling that I started to, this frozen feeling, the humanity came back into me. When I saw this man, gave him the bread, and he told me, not, I won't have any bread, and I saw this, everything that is laws, beating, pushing, beating, and people collapse, and people die around me, just like in the wagon. I had a hope for the future, for the next day, every day, you know? Every day I thought, I can't be worse, it can be only better. And I didn't think that I will die. And then I thought, well, I do what I can, but this hysterical crying, this hysteria, it came out all the time, which I kept myself back, yes?
The Germans' response was to beat you.
Beating and in this water, and I didn't know whether it's a gas chamber or not.
Did you know of gas chambers?
Well, we didn't know really, but I knew the rumors. I did not understand really like the grown-ups. But I knew it in Dachau later, because they used to give us, we didn't have soap to wash ourselves, and they gave us a soap which was very nice and very good, and it was called Riff, written on it Riff. R-I, I think double F, I don't know exactly the spelling. And that was from human bodies done.
How did you find that?
And, well, you see, in the camp was no secret. For me, I was a kid, don't forget. So I even if I was clever, even if I tried to do I heard what they talk. So they sometimes came through messages, you know, and everyone buried it.
Because it was...
Yes. I didn't have any soap for myself ever from that reef. But because... some people who had, it was a blessing to have soap, but you see, they still buried it who could.
Because it was made from but then you other can't, inmates' bodies.
You also can't imagine that, for instance, and when I tell you in short that it was the screaming, not only from me, from other people who were really killed or even shot sometimes for this. So I learned not to scream, and then Alex, as he distributed the clothes, he tried to find me the best, but I was very tiny, very hard after I did. One, he found me an evening shoe, and the other was, I don't know. He tried to do his best. He himself, he didn't have marvelous clothes, though he was there 10 years. He had a cap over his head and an alabaster, you know.
His face.
His skin. It was, you know. He was not like a mummy, like a dead mummy or something, you know, but a beautiful, he didn't have a dry skin or what, because he had some food from those soldiers or what, I don't know. He told me how to steal, what to do.
What was the living conditions like once you got through the introductory period?
We had these barracks, but we were not sure any minute in this very cold. There were some straws. It was nothing, just a bank. No separate bankers like you used to
just see
in the camp. All one board, and as many people they pushed in as they could. And we were all shrunk anyway, small. But still you needed space, and we warmed each other. You see, no blankets, very torn, some they had, some not. And straw. And there was an oven, I remember, an oven, and sometimes it was fire, sometimes it was not a large fire, sometimes they brought in, I don't know how it was. And sometimes when we got a bit of slice of bread, then they they had a, what they cut the cheese with now, it reminds me. They cut it so slim that they can keep a slice of bread for 3 times, and they tried over the oven to eat it, just bite and bite and put it away, you know, for next day. And when Alex came in with risk of his life sometimes, and used to put me in the kitchen, told me that I shouldn't steal whole potato just because they will look for me everywhere, but if scraps of the skin, I will eat slowly before they, because they looked and watched at you, and just 2 or 3 scraps better than nothing.
Enough that you could hide.
Yes, not things to be. And that's what I did for a time when he could. Sometimes they were good to him, sometimes they were bad to him, so it was depending how I was then, you know. And the poor fellow, well, it was so bad, I went to peasants to work out as well, you know, and I was very, I didn't have any energy anymore or nothing, but they made us apple, you know what is apple?
Roll call.
Roll call. See, when you went once and you had once in a blue moon a little fire, or you could go on your bank and just think of the future or the past or Alex, somebody had children to think of. I thought of my mother, my father, just like anyone else. And sometimes I cried inside me, but I didn't want to, you know, many people cried and many people wanted to be good to each other, you see, but many were... Never, it was never true that they were stripped to animal, because even if they were jealous that the other one has a bit better, there were only in 101 that he would go and say it on you, you know?
The majority.
The majority didn't.
He tried
to help if they screamed, start to, like I said, when that girl was shouting, when I was shouting, when they pulled out my tooth. They wanted to shut me up, you see. We tried to help, really.
What were the sanitation arrangements like in Dachau, in your barracks?
Well, when they, every minute, every 2 hours, every half an hour, call out in the freeze, hours and hours, they counted out for nothing. They just wanted to kill us, right? Then the toilets were closed for a number of hours, and the washing rooms closed the water. And if they court you that you go without permission, if you could get out somehow, it was not far, and they found you, they pushed you in and they made you clean the dirt. And as I say to you, as I sit here, I done it myself, so I know. So when these doctors on that BBC interview said the story with full-heartedly, and they said that people say that they can't imagine it. I felt very bad about it, that they can't imagine that when they explained that the Germans had in their toilets this luxury, that they could vomit, sorry to tell you. And if we wanted to be in hygiene and not to be reduced for inhuman, then we had to go and be pushed in the dirt and clean it.